Reading will be Camille Martin and Matthew Hoferek. And before we talk with Camille about her work, tell us just a bit about the series, Claire, and what's your mission with that series?
The mission is to feature artists, writers, prose and poetry, who are either Louisiana artists or regional artists. And I've been around the Lafayette literary scene for 25 years, and it's something. I was actually inspired by Patrice Melnick because she runs such a successful series at Casa Azul Gifts, and I was inspired by her to bring something to Lafayette, and it's something new. And it's the Voices Seasonal Reading Series, and because of my time schedule and the work that I do, and also how I'm dedicated to my family, I picked doing it in winter, spring, summer, fall, which worked with my schedule, but it also ties in with the seasons. And sometimes the authors who have come to read will tie in their readings with something of the season. And what I like about it is that it's a simple format. It's usually two readers, and we mix it up. And we've been really lucky to have some amazing writers that have come and read for us. And also the audiences just seem to be so receptive and warm. And people, I say it, and it's true, that we're meaning seekers. And I think people really want to engage with the literary arts. And there's just every time we have had an event, and we've had five, I always see new people. And then we've also started to develop some regulars, people that come and that really look forward to it. I think the timing, doing it four, maybe five times a year, keeps people, gives me time to schedule writers and get people in. And it also gives time for promotion, but it gives people time to just want it more, leave them wanting more. So people will come and just be really receptive. And I've really enjoyed this past year doing it. And we're going into 2013, and we've already booked through the whole year. We're already booked, and a little later, if you don't mind, I'd like to share with a little bit of who's coming in the 2013.
Definitely. And I would like to share with our audience, too, that you're going to be part of our series called From the Poet's Bookshelf, which comes on a little bit later on in this hour that Daryl Bourke began when he was poet laureate. He reads poetry by poets from Louisiana, people who are writing about Louisiana. And on this Valentine's Day, he'll be reading two of your poems.
Yes.
As well.
One is a love poem, and I call all lovers of poetry and lovers to tune in, because I'm really honored that he has done this for me. And I'm hoping that his intention was to read a love poem on Valentine's Day so that we can spread the love throughout the region.
He carefully prepares that program.
Oh, good.
I'm sure that's why he chose it. So we'll look forward to that a little bit later on in the hour. And with us is Camille Martin. And it's actually kind of interesting, the two readers for Saturday evening. Matthew Hoferek is from somewhere else, but now makes his home in Lafayette. Camille, you're from this area, but now make your home in Toronto, Canada. So kind of a little cross immigration here. And you were with us many years ago, and it was a difficult time for a lot of people. It was right after Katrina, many people coming back to this area, coming to this area for the first time. And you were here for a period of time having a reading, and you came into our old studios. Very interesting. I remember that quite well. You went to Canada right after that and made your home there, and obviously it was a good move for you. But tell us a bit about your background. You're from this area. You're Acadian. Tell us how you got interested in writing.
Yes, I'm from Lafayette originally. My father's side of the family is Cajun. It's Martin. Mm-hmm. And I'm not really sure. I've been thinking about this a lot. I think my mother was a great influence on me with language, and I'm just realizing that more and more as I read some of the things that she has written. I'm here to visit her, and she wrote a series of little booklets through a life writing course at UL. And she's an amazing writer, and she doesn't even really realize it. And so I think that the music also was a big influence on me. She was a piano teacher, and in fact, I went on to get a master's degree in piano performance. So I think it was after that that I started getting serious about poetry. So I think there was some crossover with the music and the poetry.
Well, and there's something, even if someone just scans quickly over your poetry, there's this lovely lyrical quality. quality to them. Even if you're not reading them out loud, you can feel that, the rhythm. There's a kind of a really natural, beautiful rhythm to them.
Something strange is happening in the brain that connects the two somehow.
Obviously it is. Yeah. So a degree in music, and then you got your MFA from UNO, and then eventually got your PhD, and that was in English. In creative writing.
Just English at LSU.
And so you began publishing books before Katrina, I believe. You had a chapbook, and then we're working on some poetry right around the time of Katrina.
Yes.
Yeah. I think people are very interested in, and we have a lot of poets on here and talk a lot about series, but I think that interests a lot of people as to how do you make that a profession? What is it that drives someone who thinks of themselves as a writer, and how do you go about doing it? How do you shape your life as a poet? Like when you envision yourself as a poet, what do you think about?
Actually, I just, it's something that I'm kind of driven to do. Mm-hmm. And when I was a musician, maybe it's partly my obsessive personality. when I was a musician, I was accustomed to practice, 4 to 8 hours a day. And I think that kind of discipline maybe carried over into the poetry, but it's a lot more than that. It's just wanting to get the poem right, wanting to have a clarity, and that comes with not just writing the poetry, but also editing. For me, editing is very important, and sometimes just taking a word or two away can just open the gates of the poem to this deeper meaning that was not really revealed before. So it's very important for me to have that kind of clarity may not be the right word, but it just something opens up in the poem.
Mm-hmm. We all know what it sounds like to hear a wrong note in a song or a piece of music that's familiar to us.
Yes.
And you obviously as a composer are hearing those wrong notes when you're reading your poems.
The rhythm, the timbre. I think of timbre, which is a musical term, but I think of the timbre of poetry as well. The difference between the way a clarinet sounds and a violin sounds. Maybe the difference between the way a certain vowel is different from another vowel.
Mm-hmm. So why, I think again, a lot of people are curious, why, if you have something to say, why poetry and not prose? What is it about poetry that allows you to express your thoughts? I mean, it seems like a simple question since you're a poet, but for many people, that's they don't see poetry, they don't hear poetry.
I've tried my hand at various times at writing prose, at writing stories, but I just find it very intimidating somehow. Just like some people, prose writers or narrative writers find poetry intimidating. Mm-hmm. To me, there's poetry. Allows me a kind of joy in playing with language that, and I know that prose writing can be just as beautifully poetic as poetry. But for me, it was originally the playfulness with playing with the language that was ultimately important. Now, in my most recent book, Looms, I've kind of gone back to narrative in a very weird kind of surreal way. So Looms is actually a series of little stories, very surreal stories, but nonetheless little narratives.
Well, of course you can have narrative in poetry.
Yes, of course. Of course. But I hadn't done that before because my previous book was Sonnets, which was mostly lyrical exploration, meditative.
Well, how would you describe your poetry in general? Give us, I guess, like you might describe a period in art or a type of music. How would you describe your poetry?
Well, I think that my poetry would be it's concerned with the it's sort of language or poetry looking at itself and exploring consciousness, what it is to think as a human being. I got really interested in cognitive science at a certain point when I was writing my dissertation, exploring correspondences between the discoveries of cognitive scientists during the 90s, which was the so-called decade of the brain, when all these ideas about the brain were being overturned, and the way that certain poets were writing about, about thinking, the way that we actually think, the illusions that are so necessary in a way for us to live and to survive, and yet they are, in fact, a kind of an illusion about the world. And so I like to explore those illusions.
And how do you do that? What subjects do you use in order to explore those? Because obviously those are the philosophical concepts with which you approach your poems. What do you cloak them in? What are some of your subjects?
I mean, there are a lot of different things to explore subject wise. It's not just abstractly writing about, you know, thought, but it's the process of thought. How do we actually think? Mm-hmm. And it just like cognitive scientists have discovered that, you know, thought or the structure of the brain and the structure of thought is actually a lot less linear than had been previously thought, a lot less centralized than we had previously thought. So is the kind of thing that I want to explore in poetry, the way that one thought, you know, leads to another. Mm-hmm. And yet there is some kind of inner coherence that brings it together and makes it also poetry.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't mean to minimalize or try to get you to completely encapsulate, you know, how you write or what you write about. But it's interesting for people to think about it. You know, people, lay people who are not poets, who don't write poetry, it is like a foreign country to them. You know, we maybe experienced it a bit in high school, but really don't encounter it daily in our lives. Right. Maybe take us through your books that you have published and just briefly describe them. Maybe that'll help us show a bit of the history of your writing.
Okay. Well, I'd like to the second book, Codes of Public Sleep. That was a book that was written half in New Orleans and half in Toronto. And the half that was written in New Orleans, especially, I was working at the public library in New Orleans. I was working at a reference desk and was working full time, also teaching at Loyola University. Didn't have a lot of time to write. So during my lunch breaks, I would walk around downtown and write and also take photographs of public spaces. And it sort of developed into a meditation about public space and public actions, public and private spaces and actions. And so that was very much a New Orleans poem. And the other half was, well, you can see where the other half comes in Toronto because ice and snow start to creep into the poems.
No more banana plants.
No more banana plants. And then I wrote a book of 101 sonnets. I look at sonnets as my love affair with language. I wrote it for myself, really, to tell you the truth. And if anybody else loved it, then that was wonderful. But I just wanted to have fun and explore language without worrying so much about what anybody might think about what I was writing. And it just gave me so much permission and freedom to write, and that it was just a joy for me. Mm-hmm. And that was entirely written in Toronto, but in fact, there's a New Orleans poem or two in there. There's my Katrina poem is there, and Looms is my most recent book. And as I said before, I went back to narrative and just started telling little tales.
Weaving tales.
Weaving tales.
I want to tell people who may just be tuning in, my guests are Claire Martin, Camille Martin, both poets. Claire, of course, is putting together the series at Carpe Diem downtown called Voices in Winter. That will take place this Saturday, February 16th, from 7 until 9 p.m. Camille will be reading at the Voices in Winter. Camille, from Lafayette, now lives in Toronto, moved there after Katrina, has published several books and read all over the United States and in a number of other countries as well. If you visit her website, you will, I'm so touched by the people making comments about your poetry. It's really, you can tell a lot. You know, there's sometimes people think, oh, blurbs are just there because, you know, people force them to write the blurbs. But these are really heartfelt, and they're by other poets and writers, and they're really lovely. Obviously, a great deal of admiration and affection for your poetry and your other work as well, because you're a collage artist in addition to your poetry.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And my two most recent books actually feature my collages on the cover, which was it was a great joy to do that and to work with a publisher who was willing to work with me on it, with my art as well.
Mm. Well, you have those two books here, and so I think maybe if you wouldn't mind reading something from both of them.
Well, I... just as a matter of local interest or regional interest, perhaps, like I could read my Katrina poem. And of course, for a lot of people, we were all talking about how hard it was to wrap our minds around this huge event that saw us as a beloved city just drowning. And the thing that I was thinking was, you know, how did this come to be? You know, how did things lead up to this point where, I mean, I was getting ready to move to Toronto, and all of a sudden I found myself living for, you know, 6 weeks in Lafayette with my parents. How did this come to be? Mm-hmm. And it was just so mind-boggling. So I kept just, you sort of go to a place where to achieve a level of peace. And for me, that was remembering the beauty of traveling with my parents when I was a child through the Rocky Mountains. We would go camping, and we would go hiking up into the high mountains, and you would just look down from a certain vantage point and see these beautiful, pristine, alpine, you know, tundra lakes that were sort of sapphire lakes. And there was sort of a purity. And, of course, there's a relationship with the water, too, the contrast between that and the muddy waters that just devastated the city. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the poem is called Katrina Tundra. I make up paths that end without warning in the eye of the storm. I know which path to take, but once I start thinking, deciding becomes impossible. On the tundra, old juniper bushes were once juniper berries. I gaze at the news on TV, old enough to bury childish nostalgia, but not too old to cultivate obsessive watching. A child in the public library, I gazed at the yellowing pages of sapphire tundra lakes. I learned of the yellowish waters of the flood. I learned that ptarmigans turn white in winter, and gazed at an island afloat in the middle of water, shimmering in the wintry sun. In my neighborhood, islands of red ants float in filthy water.
How long did you live in New Orleans?
About 13 years.
And you've been in Toronto since Katrina?
Since Katrina. It wasn't the reason for my moving, but I was packing in the middle of Katrina.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And is there a sonnet in there that might characterize something about your new home, Toronto, something of a different flavor?
Okay. Let's see. I'm not sure if this one has... Yes, here's one with snow in it. So, footfalls on snow pass other footfalls. Underfoot, furrows crisscross the sleeping kingdom. Over sleep's pages creep gambits. In the king's gambit, subjects open their books to the flight of unorthodox birds. The birds announce the untimely demise of the king. It was time, they chirp, for winter. And anyway, what's the matter with bad news? There's cruelty in the pirouettes of tiniest matter. Locks cruelly breed locks. With that, they flit away to their otherworldly nests to breed more discontent in the kingless realm. There's no time for winter, cries the king's ghost as he watches his subjects pass each other in the snow.
You know, you talk about a play of language, and that many of these were works that were just for the sheer joy of playing with words, but your images are incredibly intense as well. And as a collage artist, do you find when you're, do they complement each other, what you're creating on collages? Does it complement the poetry in any way? Does it help you write the poem?
I think there's very much a relationship between the collage and the poetry. I don't think there's a direct correspondence, but mm-hmm. The process is kind of similar, and that's juxtaposition. And a cognitive scientist said that, you know, this is the essence of creativity, but being able to put two things close to each other that are not necessarily like each other, and to find ways that they might, you know, talk to each other, engage in a dialogue with each other. And So I think that that's certainly what I do in my collages. I'll maybe put, a snake flying through the air carrying a staircase and just let those two things either be without having to mean anything or to create a possible narrative that might vary from viewer to viewer.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think probably, and all of us obviously experience things like that in dreams, even though we're tempted to in our everyday lives go, ah, snake, staircase, you know, that. But we're all susceptible to those juxtaposition of images, at least in our dreams.
Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But we rely on poets to bring it out into the daylight and really make us look at those images. Who are some of the poets that you read that you like?
Well, I've been reading a lot of Canadian poets, and just want to say I think that when I moved to Canada, I hardly knew any Canadian poets, and I really had a lot of catching up to do. Part of it is that Canadian books in general do not often find their way to bookshelves of bookstores or libraries in the United States, and vice versa, I hasten to add. Canadian poets are sometimes not terribly familiar with American poets, except all but the most famous ones, perhaps. So I had a lot of catching up to do. So right now I'm reading some Canadian poets that really interest me quite a bit. Ken Babstock,
it's rather
Jeremy
famous.
Dodds. And
this one that we have heard about here, I think she's published quite a bit. Her first name is Anne.
Anne Carson?
Anne Carson.
Yes.
Yeah, she's Canadian as
Yes, exactly.
Do you read her?
No, not a lot.
Mm-hmm. But there are so many, I'm sure.
But she's very famous, yes.
Yes, yeah. Again, my guest, Camille Martin, is a poet from Louisiana, from Lafayette, now living in Toronto. She will be reading as a part of the Voices in Winter reading series that Claire Martin has put together, and she'll be reading this Saturday along with Matthew Hofferack, 7 until 9 at Carpe Diem. Now, your latest book is called Looms, and again, very interesting that would be the title as you talk about stories and creating stories in your poetry. How did you come to write this series of poems? What drove you?
Sometimes you don't really know. going back to cognitive science, upwards of 90% of our cognitive processes are not known to us consciously. So sometimes you don't really know as a poet why you do certain things or where a poem is going. And sometimes that's when the most interesting things happen. There is something in ourselves, this deep sort of oceanic, subconscious thought that is roiling inside of us and that knows things before we become aware of them. As a poet, we've all been in the position of writing a poem, and only later do we realize, oh, I didn't know that that's what I was writing about, or that that's what I meant. But something inside of us is writing that. So I can't really tell you why I started writing
Claire
stories.
Nodding.
Yes.
Well, I was just thinking that the word that comes to me is intuition, and I'm thinking. And that could be debated by cognitive scientists, but I'm thinking that that's something that I feel from your poetry, that you have this deep, keen intuition, that you allow whatever those words, let them flow, and you've trust it, and you just fly with it. And so, I just wanted to say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's exactly what happens. You just really have to give yourself permission to not know where you are going, and just to see what happens and trust that, intuition or whatever you want to call it. But this was written, I found this quote later, I have to say, but it kind of rang true for the book. And this is the epigraph from Barbara Guest, an American poet. Its remoteness from the center of things is what is endearing about a tale, and it doesn't tell the truth about itself. It tells us what it dreams about. So these are dreaming tales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, going back to that, dreams.
Yes.
Could you read one from the book?
Sure.
And this is Looms by my guest Camille Martin, who will be reading this Saturday. Mm-hmm.
They will take my island to ukulele seas, where mist coalesces into petals laced with dew. I imagine already hearing their cantabile swerve off the chart into succulent winds. They make me believe that, though we haven't yet been formally introduced, I try to make contact by floating a corked bottle of cockles and musty pages toward a cartoon etched in my brain of a ragged man marooned on a neighboring island, poring over a treasure map. They patiently acknowledge my attempt. I'm forever late scanning the horizon, so here's where I have to dig. But what island? In what sea? Which me pumps the treadle that spins the gears that keep the zodiac mentally wheeling across the big clock? This is what I know. I exaggerate their finessed vision, their exploded view of every grain of sand. Such compliant metaphors, these grains on which I circle along the mundane fractals of my shoreline, guided by shape-shifting constellations. My island is trained in the arts of prisoners dragging red herrings to dead ends and splashing through the middle of creeks to throw off the dogs that never evolved here anyway. They know that. I eavesdrop on their prattle fathoms under distant fishing boats. By the light of my remaining candles, I carve tools from native trees as wax puddles on the volcanic rock that shaped my island. They will take my island to that melted wax.
Do you read a lot of folk tales, fairy tales? There's elements of that in there as well as dream language, although many of those may be have much dream language in them.
Yes. Well, actually, part of sonnets is based on nursery rhymes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fairy tales are very important to me growing up, too.
Yeah, as we were talking earlier, you were talking about your work with high school students. Yes. You're kind of a writer in residence in a number of high schools in Toronto. What a job that is to try and both inspire and instruct high school students in the art of poetry. How do you approach that?
I approach it by couching the writing in a series of games. I call them poetry games. And so many students are a little bit uptight about poetry. They're really anxious about getting it right. They think maybe it has to rhyme or something. And so they're afraid of it. And so putting it in terms of a game and saying, there's no right or wrong, let loose, tell your conscious mind to take a hike and just allow that something else inside of you just to let loose and have fun with language. You're safe here. You can be as weird as you want and just play the games and allow them to set free the language within them.
Mm-hmm. And do they respond to that?
It's been wonderful. What helps, I find, is to not to just say, okay, write a metaphor, but to give them something, some tools to write with. One of the principles that I use in teaching writing is that language is a shared and communal project, and so is poetry. We don't learn language just ex nihilo. We just don't pull language from the air. It's a social act and process. And so we're constantly being influenced by language around us, whether it's, you know, listening to the radio or TV or billboards or conversations, telephone, you know, or reading books, other poets. We're constantly being influenced. So why not, you know, use that to inspire us? So one of the games that I use, for example, is to write a cliche poem. So I'll give them language to work with, to play with, give them a page full of cliches, you know, love is blind, and just ask them to string those together into a poem. And it's just amazing what they come up with. You'd think they might not be, you know, coherent at all, but something inside of them is driving them mm-hmm. that wants out, that shapes the cliches mm-hmm. into something very lyrical.
Right.
And so I'm constantly amazed by what they come up with, mm-hmm. and so are they.
Well, that's an interesting exercise because you're both helping them to create something with those cliches and be conscious of them, not to use them
exactly.
in other instances.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The teachers love it too.
Yeah. Again, my guest, Camille Martin, with Claire Martin. Claire Martin has put together the series Voices in Winter. This Saturday, Camille Martin will read, as well as Matthew Hoferek, who is a fiction writer.
He is a fiction writer.
And he'll be reading. Camille, you'll be reading first?
Yes? No, actually, Matthew's going to read first.
Okay. And then Camille.
And then Camille.
All
yes.
Right. Well, that's during Second Saturday Art Walk, so there'll be a lot of people downtown. It's going to be beautiful weather. So 7 until 9 at Carpe Diem. And Camille will be reading. If you'd like to know more about her work, you have a website. How do people get to that?
I have a website and a blog. The the blog is rogueembryo.com. Mm-hmm. It's just what it sounds like, Rogue Embryo. And my website is www.camillemartin.ca.
For Canada.
For Canada,
all
yes.
Right. CA. And there's information about your books. I believe there's some of your collages there
yes.
as well.
Yes.
So people can find out more about it. Again, Camille Martin from Lafayette, lived in New Orleans for many years, just after Katrina moved to Toronto, and is here sharing her work with us this Saturday downtown at Carpe Diem. And Claire Martin, we're going to be hearing your poetry just
I'm
now.
Very excited about that.
And this is going to be Daryl Bork with From the Poet's Bookshelf.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.